There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
You're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, the best of our show this morning. Here are today's business headlines.
DubaiEye 103.8 Business Headlines.
In association with insurancemarket.ie.
Dubai e-commerce player Noon is tying up with eBay. The move is going to allow customers in the Middle East to buy products from the US and around the world from the second half of this year.
Companies and consumers in the UAE are bracing for an interest rate hike later this evening. There's a 96% chance that the US will hike rates tonight. The UAE Central Bank will immediately follow suit.
Abraj, the Dubai-based investment group, could file for provisional liquidation this month as it seeks to restructure around $1 billion in debt. Now, that is according to widespread media reports, including the FT and Bloomberg.
GEMS Education may delay its stock market listing. That's after Dubai's froze school fees. It's according to Bloomberg, which quotes sources saying that GEMS is studying the impact on its profitability.
Investment Corporation of Dubai, the government fund that owns Emirates, says profit jumped 12% to 20 billion with a B dirhams last year, thanks partly to much improved performance at the aviation giant.
Tesla is cutting 3,000 jobs, nearly 9% of its workforce, in what its CEO Elon Musk is calling a difficult but necessary reorganization.
DubaiEye 103.8 Business Headlines.
In association with insurancemarket.ie. Compare insurance for your car, health, home or business with insurancemarket.ie.
So Brandy, so many big stories to discuss this morning. For you, the big one was e-commerce Noon tying up with eBay.
Yeah, just from a sort of a land-grabbing point of view, really, more than anything else. Obviously, we know that Souq is now backed by Amazon, powered by Amazon, I think is the official language on the vans. And now Noon, who we know want to make a big splash in this space, the Saudi and Dubai-based e-commerce players, they've tied up with eBay. And I have to admit, I scratched my head over this a little bit. eBay's a mammoth name. We all know it. But we all know it mentally in connection with secondhand goods. And even though there are now a load of sellers who are selling new things on eBay, I do wonder what it's going to look like when Noon is working with it here.
The initial reaction is that eBay is the place you go if you want some obscure Joni Mitchell long players in the original cover, maybe signed by the artist.
eBay is America's DeBizzle.
Right.
That's probably not how they're thinking of it.
That's not on their vans, is it?
No.
But it is a big deal, isn't it? And we've been talking to some guys about this. You can hear those interviews online as well. But so many stories that came thick and fast this morning. One that Malcolm picked up overnight was interesting. GEMS Education, the school's operator. It's a Bloomberg story. They say that GEMS is thinking of putting its stock market listing, its IPO, on hold because the Dubai government has frozen school fees, and that's messing with their profit forecasts.
Yeah, they're going to be examining exactly what impact that freeze is going to have. And again, I know nothing, I've spoken to no one, but I did have a look at this and I wondered whether or not the unnamed sources, Bloomberg story, are genuinely saying this is going to really mess up profitability at GEMS, which, as Trevor McFarlane, we're going to hear from him in this podcast, points out, GEMS are doing all right at making a bit of money. He's not worried about the financial future of GEMS, or whether this is actually just making more of a statement. Am I being overly cynical?
Well, no, I think this will be the lawyers who said, whoa, hold on a minute here. Because if you think about an IPO prospectus, what does it include? It includes forward-looking statements about the company. When you buy shares in a company, you're buying a stake in their future revenues and future profits. So they will have forecasts over the next 10 years saying, we expect our revenues to increase incrementally by between 2 and 3%. So by the time we get to 2025, they will be X is where they are now, and they'll be X plus 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 by 2025. If you've suddenly got the Dubai government coming in and saying you got to freeze school fees in 2019, who knows what they'll do in 2021, who knows what they'll do in 2023. So those forecasts on the back of which the valuation is made, suddenly there's a big question mark. The assumptions in those is that they'll be able to increase revenues over time, and that assumption is questioned, and the lawyers will have said, we got to pause on this one, we got to look at these forecasts again.
Well, we've looked at the whole fee cutting this morning from a number of perspectives. We've had three experts in the studio giving us the industry perspective, the economist perspective and the consultant's perspective. Let's actually start hearing from them now. First up this morning, we had Christopher Hewitt, a man born on the right side side of the planet. He is the director at TRI Hospitality, fellow Kiwi, very fond of him. He is a man who keeps his eye on the travel industry, particularly hotels and tourism. So, with the announcement that the municipality fees for hotels and restaurants were going to be cut from 10 to 7%, as you've heard in our headlines, we've been asking Christopher what it could mean for the industry as a whole.
Well, you've got to take that as a very positive step. If you look at hotels in Dubai and also neighbouring Abu Dhabi, which also has announced a reduction in some of the fees overnight as well. Looking at hotel rates, at the moment there is anywhere between 25% and 28% additional taxes and fees that are on top of room rates. So to go from 10 to 7% is a positive element, and it helps when it comes to the affordability of hotels, particularly for international visitors, especially when there's markets where they're impacted by the currency fluctuations.
I was staggered last time I stayed in Abu Dhabi, only about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I booked, it was a 4-star hotel, and the rate was not high. It was a Premier Inn, it was one of these kind of 3-star hotels. So the room rate was less than 300 dirhams, but it's 28% on top of that when I went to click and play, and I got the message from the credit card company. I said, whoa, those are completely different numbers, because you had, I forget the breakdown now, but it was 28%.
Mm, that's right. And, that's what a lot of people don't understand when they go and book the hotels online from different parts of the world, and they see the rates that are being charged. They're not aware of the additional fees that are going to be on top of it. So a 28% fee on top of it is going to hit, obviously, tourist pocket. And I think this reduction is hopefully one step of many that will help make sure that hotels in Dubai become, and Abu Dhabi, remain competitive in terms of pricing for international tourists, especially as we move towards more of a mass tourism market.
So what do we have now? If I'm booking the same hotel in Abu Dhabi or in Dubai tonight, and say that it says on booking.com, 1,000 dirhams for your night at XYZ Hotel. What am I going to pay on top of that 1,000 dirhams, Chris?
Well, you've got a service charge of 10% that's currently in place within a hotel. So obviously the 10% municipality fee, this is for Dubai, which are now reduced to 7%, and then 5% VAT, as well as the tourism dirham that's applied, depending, and that fee is dependent on the classification of hotels.
So my 1,000 dirhams is going to become 1,100 with the service charge, 1,170 with the municipality fee now, and then an extra 50 for the VAT.
Correct. Yeah.
So it's going to be over 1,200 still.
Correct.
How does that compare with other markets around the world?
Well, if you look at other places around the world, it varies. But in generally, the sort of upper limits are around about 20% to 22%. So Dubai and Abu Dhabi are still very much above the market averages and destinations when it comes to on costs and fees on top of room rates.
I'm going to play devil's advocate and ask the question that I know many people are. Is the cut from 10 to 7% enough to make a material difference?
If it's looking at a one-night stay, not necessarily. But if you think about one of the key aspects that the tourism authorities are wanting to do, and that is increase the length of stay. So if you've got someone staying 7 to 10 nights, that's going to have an impact on the overall length of stay, and particularly if you add in the revenues from restaurants that are also going to be impacted within the hotels with the municipality reduction.
What about this service charge, 10%, that we all just take for granted and just blindly pay? Where does that go, and why should we pay it?
Well, service charge is part of the additional fees that hotels pay, and that goes generally towards paying towards staff and also staff
costs. If you submitted your bill to a hotel company, and those are the people who basically pay your bills as a consultant, and you'd agreed a fee, and it's okay, and it's going to be $20,000 for this consultancy project, and you get the report, and then they got at the end, you got the bill, $20,000 plus 10% Chris's service charge, so it's actually $22,000. They would laugh you out of the room, Chris. So why do we pay it to them?
Well, Dubai, and there are no exceptions. There's other markets around the world where they do have these service charges in there. Is it something that needs to be considered? Maybe so, because if we want the market and the destination to be competitive on a global level, then these additional fees need to be looked at.
Can you refuse to pay a service fee if you think the service was rubbish?
I don't think so.
Right. Let's talk more broadly about the context of the hotel market. I was looking at your most recent report, your hot stats, as you call them every month you release them. And here's the one of the recent headlines. April 2018, plummeting rate hits profit levels at hotels in the Middle East and Africa. Now, that's a very broad region. But broadly speaking, how tough or otherwise is it out there at the moment?
It is a challenging market across the region, with a few exceptions and markets, including Beirut and Bahrain, are starting to see some improvements. But in general, across the board, we are seeing reductions in average room rates. A lot of that is to do with currency impacts, as well as the low oil prices, which have impacted corporate activity. Occupancy levels are mixed across the board. Places like Dubai and Abu Dhabi are still relatively stable, albeit with a few fluctuations here and there. If we see Kuwait is down when it comes to occupancy levels, but rates are relatively stable. But Egypt is the big story at the moment, with demand resurging in both Cairo and Sharm el-Sheikh, and we're starting to see a lot more tourism activity return to Egypt.
I can't let you go without throwing this one at you. It is a bit of a curveball, but the World Cup starts in Russia tomorrow. We often see price gouging by hotels in markets that are holding events, whether it's a World Cup or an Olympics or what have you. I know the Russian authorities have tried to discourage hotels from doing that. What are your industry sources telling you about how the FIFA World Cup is playing out in the Russian hotel market?
I don't have anything specifically about Russia at the moment, but I think it just really comes back to simple supply and demand dynamics. You know, if there is demand for hotel rooms and people and hotels know that there are people wanting to have a hotel for the stay, well, they're going to increase the prices. And once occupancy levels get up to a certain point where hotels are facing compression, which is generally above 90%, that's when they really start yielding on average rates and try and generate higher rates from guests.
Chris, always nice talking to you. Appreciate you joining us this morning. Chris Hewitt, Director of TRI Consulting, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're taking a real
deep dive.
Yeah, we're taking a real deep dive on this one because it's such an important industry for Dubai, tourism and hospitality. Naeem Madad is a regular visitor to the Dubai Eye studio because he shoots from the hip. He's a straight talker. He's the boss of Gates Hospitality, which runs a number of restaurants. Tub of Butter is one of them that springs to mind. And he gave us his view on this cut from 10% to 7% in terms of municipality fees.
I think the 3% does help. What's interesting for me, Malcolm, is that the authorities, that the government are actually tuning in and listening to our wish list and trying to assist us by having a sustainable business moving forward. That's my interest.
I think so. I mean, you know, we're so used to be seeing costs heading one way and that's upwards that it's refreshing to see some organisations, in this case Dubai Municipality, reversing that trend. I mean, as somebody who watches the hospitality market closely, what effect, you know, it's nice to have, but what effect do you think it's going to have on the market?
Look, I think from a figures perspective, it's a single-digit impact. I think, again, what Dubai is trying to do, or the UAE is trying to do, because Abu Dhabi is on the same band here as well, they're trying to extend the average length of stay. So if you're staying for a longer period, I think it does make an impact. But for a one night, 3%, with all due respect, you don't really feel it. Now, the question is, will it actually make you change your mind and stay longer for a 3%? I very much challenge that.
And is it, it's as I understand it, it's not just on hotels, it's restaurants and everything else.
Correct.
So if I on a 500 dirham bill, if I go, I'll save 15 dirhams. I mean, I'm not exactly sort of convinced that's going to encourage many people to go out more. What do you think?
Hence, I started by saying what I am. I think it's a step in the right direction. It's the tip of the iceberg, as I'd call it. But I'm looking for a lot more support. I'm looking for a lot more depth and structure to support businesses, particularly in these tough challenges. Not forgetting that at the beginning of the year, we had an introduction of the VAT.
Well, I was going to say, this is very much, it seems like a counterbalance to VAT.
Different government offices, different bodies that are stepping in and trying to facilitate for us. But from a cost perspective, it's still high. We're still ahead 2% principally.
So what's going to happen if I go out for dinner this evening or over the weekend during the Eid break at one of the restaurants that you've worked on your website? There are many of them. Folly by Nick and Scott I could go to. I could go to Tub of Butter or Lovely Places, Ashia de Cuba, wherever it is. Am I going to get the benefit of that 3%, Or is the price going to stay the same and it's just going to be a slight kick to the profitability of the restaurant?
Sadly, we'll not be able to pass these on to the consumers. The 3% will actually cost me more to print my menus in the restaurants. Let's be realistic. 3% on a 100 dirhams, as you rightly said, 15 dirhams. It's not a deep approach. Nonetheless, my positive sentiments is about that the government's authorities are listening. They're providing solutions. Tiny albeit, but at least we're in the right direction.
What about the service charge? Because we broke down the additional costs that we pay on a hotel bill or whatever it may be. Yes, there's the 10% or now 7% municipality fee. Yes, there's the 5% federal VAT, but there's that service charge as well. And we were questioning that earlier.
Look, again, within the hospitality, you've got anything between 25 to 30% additional costs that are not necessarily hidden costs, but they are hidden costs. And the service charge is certainly one of those. There's a big question mark about service charge. A lot of times, owners and developers do spend the money on employees' benefits. Other times, it goes straight to the bottom line.
So is it now time to just scrap the service charge? Is that a conversation that we need to be having and say, do we need to look at this? And maybe it's a relic of a bygone era. We need to scrap that and just have one charge.
Look, absolutely. I think it's time to really focus, look deep into what's being charged and where the money's going and what are the consumers ending up with. Service charge is one of those. And I like to loop in the football that's starting tomorrow. As investors, again, we've just been presented with massive bills in the vicinity of $15,000 to be able to air the games. Now, this is where the government can step in and help us. $15,000 for a month in order for us to be able to air the games is not acceptable, and we have to pass that cost on to someone somehow.
But that is something you would pay to the broadcaster, would it not be? Rather
correct, but it's a cost center to us as businesses, and we need to include that in our selling prices somewhere.
One of my questions to you was going to be, how easy is it for hospitality outlets to change all their billing systems, the cashier, the back office, printed menus, etc.? And you've answered that by saying that you are not going to discount this 3%. Doesn't that put you at loggerheads with the municipality who've imposed this? You can't not reduce the charges by 3%.
Sure. Let me rephrase my charging, the passing on. Again, we've just inherited 5%, and I was big enough to say on public forums, we're not passing on the VAT to our guests. So we've absorbed it. So now, basically, we're still 2% ahead of what we have absorbed ourselves. So there is no cost to my consumers. My business model is all about value, is all about this, catering for people who reside here, who look at value and come back for quality propositions.
But you are, at the moment, charging that municipality fee, the 10%.
We do charge it and we
but
pass it on straight.
Are they not going to want to see that reduced on your menus or on your stationery?
Again, most of our menus have an inclusive price, so all of these prices are built in.
Because, I mean, if you're someone like the Jumeirah Group, I imagine it would be a logistical cobweb, really, and pretty costly for the industry in general to make these changes.
There is a cost involved, absolutely. And like I said, printing menus would be one of the most expensive chapters. Nonetheless, the rest of it is all programming. It's all an Excel sheet.
And I remember when I was studying Economics 101 at university, when you talk about tax increases and indirect tax increases like VAT, menu costs is an economic phenomenon that people study. It's a phrase for discussing those costs involved in changing the prices. If we look more broadly at where we stand with the restaurant industry at the moment, every time you've been in over the past 12, 18 months or so, we've talked about challenging times. Do we see any green shoots for the restaurant industry?
Look, my last visit, I think we spoke heavily about regulations and government support, and I think that still, really, this is the anchor that I would like to talk about, whether it's fees, whether it's cost of trade licenses, whether it's rent, and these are still major issues, and this is what we're looking for. We're not looking for the 3%, we're looking for the big impacts on a P&L and providing sustainability.
In terms of demand, though, and people going into restaurants, are we seeing any...
The supply and demand, again, we spoke about this in detail last visit I was here.
You put the cat well and truly among the pigeons in terms of supply, didn't you? But on the demand side...
The demand is there. I think people are spending. I think they're spending less. I think people are watching the spending patterns. I think a lot of people are also coming in saying, let me have a look at what options there are, what happy hours there are, what values there are. There's a lot of bargain hunters out there.
But, I mean, that's up to you, isn't it? I mean, you've chosen to open restaurants. It's not up to the municipality to cut their fees or anyone else or the government to cut their fees. You knew that when you were coming into the business. I mean, surely it's up to you to sort of either adjust the number of outlets you've got or the type of outlets.
Malcolm, we're talking about building an economy. We're talking about moving forward in a sustainable environment. We're talking about... We have regulations in RTA, like I mentioned. We have regulations on the IPOs, on the monetary level as well. So why not on other businesses? We're looking at making sure that we are supported to grow together, not failures at the cost of investors.
Do you feel that there isn't enough support in that direction for you?
There isn't. There isn't. That's why I'm voicing my opinion. We need help, yeah. We need support, and we need to make sure we are heard. And you know, being here today, as I'm very proud that they have reacted. They are listening to us, and it's a very good positive step.
We know retail and hospitality has been pretty hard hit over the last few months and years as well. How bad is it in the restaurant industry, really?
Look, how bad it is varies on the concept, varies on the location, varies on your price point. So there is no blanket approach as such. But it's tough simply based on the values that are being offered out there, simply based on the amount of restaurants that are opening and keep popping up. Mm. And last but not least, it's the discounts that are being extended out there.
Well, it's a real good talking point. Thank you so much for coming in to talk about it. Naeem Madad, Chief Executive of Gates Hospitality. As always, we do appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
We've also been looking at these fee cuts, the tourism hospitality fee cuts, in light of the bigger picture, because it's not the first fee cut, joyously, we've had in the last couple of weeks. It's not the second, it's not the third, it's not even the fourth. We have had the economist Trevor McFarlane, who's the founder and chief executive of the network EMEA, in the studio this morning to put it in a wider context for us.
Look, I think it's all positive. It's moving in the right direction. I think, generally speaking, businesses are very open and receptive to what has happened, particularly with the latest fees regarding impacting more tourism and hospitality, etc. I think what is really interesting, and I think Malcolm asked this question last week to me, in terms of how free the market is, particularly, say, with the private tuition fees and those being frozen, if the government is coming in and freezing those fees, the question would be, how free is the overall market? And it was interesting, Mohammed, who works with me, our content, digital content editor, posted the interview from Business Breakfast on our social media. And one of the comments we got was somebody complaining about trying to control the market, which I think is very interesting. And what I found, and this is going to be perhaps sound a little bit strange coming from me, given that I run a network of 100 plus CEOs, right? So in a way, I represent businesses. But what I found is businesses moan no matter what. They moan when times are good, and now they're moaning. Either side of this debate, you're going to have businesses complaining, which I think is fascinating. And what I would say is, yes, times have been tough over the last couple of years in Dubai. Depending on what sector you have to get into, the devil is in the detail exactly, but particularly for B2C, let's put it that way. But what I would say is, if you hadn't made your business resilient when you saw the oil prices fall in mid-2014, the writing is on the wall. You guys talk about it every morning on this show, and anybody interested in business in the UAE listens to this show. The writing was on the wall mid-2014, if the oil prices start to fall and we start to get a sense, okay, that the language shifts to lower for longer, and businesses that didn't make their own operations resilient, in many ways, I think, have set themselves up for this position what they're in now.
Just define resilience for me in that sense. Do you mean perhaps an ability to survive on lower income and lower prices by that?
Exactly. Streamline your business to adapt to the current environment. Look at your pricing strategy, look at your margins, basic business operations. And again, this appears strange coming from me, given that I represent so many companies. But somebody has to win in these markets, right? Somebody has to win in the current environment. Even though, yes, the economy has been soft, there are businesses that are still doing well.
Talk to me then about one of our headlines this morning, which is that GEMS, the school company, is reportedly considering delaying its IPO in amongst the school freezes. This is a Bloomberg story. I've been speaking to sources close to the school operator, yada yada, who say they're planning to delay their IPO after the unexpected school freeze.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me, right? If you're planning an IPO and this is something that has come up you know, at relatively short notice. Of course, you would have to factor into that whole plan. GEMS as an operation, as a school, as a business, is one of the biggest education providers in the world. The fact that it's going for an IPO, I think it can survive the fact that there's a freeze on schools over, you know, at least the next year or so. Also, you take into account that school fees, and it's important to stress here, I'm not a parent, so I'm not a disgruntled parent. And I think that's what a lot of people start to accuse you of. But I don't have children, but just purely looking at it from the perspective of tuition fees, you know, Dubai in the UAE is one of the highest in the world after Hong Kong, according to HSBC. And then it would be fair to ask as well in terms of the actual educational output based on those high fees. So I think I have a funny sneaking suspicion that GEMS as an operation is a very successful business and it will do perfectly fine. Perhaps they have to delay their IPO, but in the grand scheme of things, I have a feeling that GEMS is going to survive this tuition freeze. And you have to take into account that there were plenty of schools already, reportedly plenty of schools, actually freezing or reducing fees. Now, the message they gave was that they wanted to attract the best students. If you were a cynic, perhaps you would say it was because the market was soft and supply and demand is starting to come into more equilibrium for the schools, which is what we want in Dubai.
Let's look at the tourism picture, because that is the big change we're talking about this morning. This cut in the municipality fees for hotels, for restaurants, 10% to 7%. What kind of difference is that 3% going to make?
Look, it's a positive step. You know, I was listening to your previous interviewee. And again, it's interesting. It comes back to that first point that I alluded to in terms of over this overall debate, with the government clearly trying to make things easier for business and make it more competitive in Dubai. That's clearly a very welcome step. And you and I have spoken to, it's been quite interesting. Depending on what side and how it impacts their own vested interests determines to the extent to which they moan about this subject.
That's just after getting your bills, I expect.
Perhaps. But, you know, for example, your last interviewee, who was very articulate and very interesting to listen to, was stating about how he wants government support in specific areas and gave examples about having to pay $15,000, I believe it was, to show the football rights. As a business, it's your decision whether you want to show the World Cup for $15,000, and you would make a calculation and a forecast based on how much revenue you're going to get by showing these, by showing the World Cup. Again, these are business decisions that you have to operate in a competitive market.
Now, listen, we've talked about some of these big changes: municipality tax on hospitality cut from 10% to 7%, school fee freezes, potential 100% ownership of companies, 10-year visas, etc., etc. Several bureaucratic steps being eradicated as well. But the one thing that sort of really concerns a lot of my friends with their own companies, they say it's all very well having your own business and doing well and winning business, but if you don't get paid, your history, cash flow is going to be the hardest part of survival for many companies at the moment. How do you think that can be solved? Is it down to the companies themselves? Is it down to government help in making companies pay their bills on time? How does it work?
Yeah, so DSO's day sales outstanding ratios tends to be very high within the broader region. The UAE, your DSO ratios would tend to be lower, you know, compared to a country or a market like Saudi Arabia. Typically, DSOs are high in Saudi and in Egypt. Dubai, it's not as big an issue. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but it's not as big an issue. In Abu Dhabi, it tends to be slightly higher. So I think any steps that reduce your DSO ratios is a good thing. But it's difficult for the government to come in and actually regulate that, depending on whether it is the government making the payments.
Well, that's the big issue, isn't it?
If it's the government making the payments, of course, you need to streamline the process as much as possible. And it's up for companies to make sure that they have their paperwork in order as well when they're actually submitting invoices, etc., which tends to be one of the reasons, I'm not saying the only reason, but one of the reasons why payments can be delayed.
One last question from me, Trevor. While we are talking about the government side of things, the other side of these fee freezes, these tax cuts, call them whatever you want, is that we're talking about government revenue here. I mean, one of the reasons, you know, that VAT was brought in was to boost non-oil revenue. It's the reason the IMF was pushing the whole region to do it. And yet at the same time, we have Dubai foregoing government revenue. What does that mean for the balance sheet?
Yeah, look, I'd still imagine that they're going to be up with the introduction of VAT, but it shows, right? We're, as a species, we're complex human beings, and you're trying to organise complex human beings within a complex society, and sometimes the government is faced with two choices, neither of which are great choices. And sometimes you have to choose the one that is going to do the least amount of, or have the least amount of an impact. So I'm sure the government ideally would have wanted to be able to introduce VAT and not have to reduce other revenue diversification efforts, which we've seen. But they've responded to the market being soft and responded to the calls from the companies to make it easier for them to do business here. Now, no matter what, I think sometimes it can be difficult to please business and please business leaders. No matter what happens, when times are good, they complain. When times are soft, they complain. And it's trying to find a balance where everybody moves forward in a way that is profitable as much as possible.
But you have some very happy consumers. Will life start to feel a bit cheaper?
I think the introduction of VAT at the start of the year is really the thing that hit consumption. You know, in our network, one of the car companies was telling me that in the first 2 months of the year, the amount of walk-ins into their showrooms was down around 34% relative to the first 2 months of last year. One of the hotel companies in our network was telling us that the amount of visits to their website looking at menus was up 40%, but the amount of people going in and spending money in the restaurants was down. And what that tells me is people are looking before they go out. They're looking at menus. They're looking at hotels and saying, well, that's pretty expensive, actually. I'm going to look for more of a casual option. And I think it's a difficult environment for F&B and hotels because the trend for consumers is shifting towards more casual dining, not necessarily walking through this beautiful, ostentatious five-star experience, but actually getting out into a casual environment, perhaps having, you know, libations and food outside. And there's more and more options for that. And the regulatory environment is actually shifting to make that easier for outlets that don't necessarily have to be in a hotel.
Trevor McFarlane, founder and chief executive of Amir, thanks for your insights this morning.
Thank you.
So loads of serious, sensible business stories to sink our teeth into at the moment. We haven't even got to the Federal Reserve in the United States. They're going to be, we think, 96% chance they'll be hiking interest rates on Wednesday night. And that means the UAE Central Bank are going to be doing the same on Thursday morning. But I've got to say, the big story for me is the World Cup kicks off 7 p.m. Dubai time Thursday evening in Moscow. We've got, of course, Saudi Arabia, local team. They're playing. You've got Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's going to be talking to Vladimir Putin about the soccer, but also the oil market. We've been looking at some of our favourite World Cup songs of the past, what, 20, 30, 40 years or so. But we began by looking at the new offering, this year's World Cup song, which we think is okay, not much better than that.
It had grown on me by the end of the show, but at the beginning, my initial thought was, what is this?
Have a listen, see what you think.
One life, one dream, one moment.
That was Live It Up, the 2018 official FIFA World Cup song performed by Nicky Jam, Will Smith, and who is the...
The obscure Kosovan artist?
Yes, Era Istrivi.
I have all of his or her long players.
Do you know what? It's okay. It's okay. It had grown on me after by the time we'd played it several times in the business breakfast, but it is not, by a long chalk, the best World Cup song ever.
And you actually give the Brits and the English some credit on this. You rarely give us credit, and our football is pretty shambolically bad, but you say we are good at one thing.
Yeah, you can do a good comedy song.
We've been looking at some of our favourites. Let's begin with Malcolm's favourite. He picked this one from 20 years ago, 1998. By Fat Les, Vindaloo.
Vindaloo, Vindaloo, and we all like Vindaloo.
very fond of Three Lions, both the original 1996 European Cup version and the updated 1998 featuring Robbie Williams.
This is it.
Talk about football coming home, and then one night in Rome, we were strong, we had grown, and now I see it's ready for walk as a good as before. Shearer certain to score, and Psycho screaming, Three Lions on his shirt, Jules Rimet still gleaming.
My favourite has to be 1990. This was when football became cool. Nessun Dorma by Pavarotti was the official theme of Italia 90. But for me and many, many others, it was New Order's World in Motion.
I have to say, over the years, some of them have missed the mark. We also dug out from the archives this morning the lesser-known Far Away in America, which was the anthem for the German national team in 1994. Didn't have this one at home on my playlist. Rich?
This one should be confined to history. So let's go on to the football itself. Begins Thursday evening. I sat down with Chris McCarty, our head of sport, asked him for his predictions. He ends up by giving us his prediction for the outright winner of this year's World Cup. But I began by asking him who's going to be the best player of the tournament.
It's a very good question that, Rich. I think always the player of the tournament will come from the eventual winners. So for me, look no further. And this, I guess, gives you an idea of where I'm leaning towards for this 2018 FIFA World Cup. I look no further than Neymar, the Brazilian poster boy. An awful lot of pressure on that young man's shoulders. It wasn't to be 4 years ago on home turf for Neymar. Of course, his World Cup cruelly ended through injury. He's been off for the past 3 months. He's been sidelined with an injury. He is now match fit. He's been looking very sharp in the warm-up matches, and I'm expecting Neymar, this to be the coming out party, if you will, for Neymar, and I am expecting him to light up Russia over the course of the next 4.5 weeks.
Sticking with individuals, though, who's going to get the golden boot? Because he's not an out-and-out goal scorer, is he?
He isn't. You'd expect Neymar to be creating and wreaking an awful lot of havoc to the back lines as opposed to being the actual finisher of the moves. I think two men stand out for me. I'll give you one that perhaps an awful lot of people might think will finish top goal scorer. That is Antoine Griezmann, the talisman for France. He's had a wonderful domestic campaign with Atletico Madrid over in Spain. Barcelona, one of a number of suitors for the Frenchman, and I think he could get amongst the goals for France. They're in Group C alongside Australia, Peru and Denmark, so you'd expect France to top that group. The other man, and this is a bit of a left field option for me. I'm a huge fan. I've been following his career very closely over the past couple of years. Just 22 years of age. It's Timo Werner. He will wear the number 9 shirt for Germany. He plays his club football for RB Leipzig. Again, he could have a huge World Cup in which we could see him complete a big money move to leave Germany at the end of the World Cup.
What about surprise packages? Because we know the kind of top 5 favourites are the two South Americans, Argentina and Brazil, and then you've got Germany, France and Spain from Europe. But outside of those 5, where's the surprise coming from?
Well, two nations for me, I think, first and foremost, and they are perennial overachievers in many respects. They got to the semi-finals back in 1998. I'm a big fan of Croatia. They've got a number of fine talents, Richard, the likes of Luka Modric, Ivan Rakitic, of course, probably the two most well-known players, Mario Mandzukic as well, the Juventus striker. But the nation that there is an awful lot of expectancy on and an awful lot of expectation, it is Belgium. Roberto Martinez, the former Wigan boss, the former Everton manager as well, he has got an abundant of attack. Talent, the likes of Eden Hazard, Kevin De Bruyne, who lit up the Premier League with Manchester City last season. On paper, at the very least, Richard, you could make a very good case for saying that Belgium could go all the way over in Russia. Whether they will, I think there's still one or two question marks over them defensively, but there's no doubt from an attacking standpoint, this Belgian side could light up Russia over the course of the next 5 weeks.
Quick word on the Arab nation, Saudi Arabia kicking the tournament off. Mohamed Salah, one of the world football's most exciting players, plays for Egypt. There are other Arab teams in there as well. Of those, which one's going to go the furthest?
This is a difficult one. You mentioned the Arab nations. Morocco as well, currently in an unbeaten 18-game run in international football. Only Spain have a better record than that, Rich, and I guess that just underlines the wonderful job that Hervé Renard, the coach, has done with that nation. In terms of who goes the furthest, you've probably got to say one of the teams in Group A, either Saudi or Egypt, just because I feel that is the more open group alongside Russia and Uruguay. Morocco have Iran, Spain and Portugal, and then of course Tunisia have Belgium and England, so I'd expect Tunisia and Morocco to have a tough time of it. I think if Mo Salah is fit, Rich, Hector Cooper, the coach, has done a great job. They're miserly, they're pragmatic, they don't concede many goals, and in Mo Salah, as we've seen over the course of the past 8, 9, 10 months, he is a superstar, he really is, and if he is fit, then he could be the man to fire Egypt into the last 16. I think their fairy tale run will end there. I don't think they're capable of moving into the quarterfinals, any of the Arab nations, truth be told. So if you're asking me which nation should fly the highest of the Arabs, of the Arab world, then I would say it would be Egypt.
Just before I press you for the outright winner, who's going to be the biggest flop, either individually or collectively as a team?
Oh, that is a good question. In terms of the big nations, you mentioned the big five. It wouldn't surprise me, and I'm probably setting myself up for a fall, so you could probably go ahead and back them as World Cup winners. It would not surprise me if France, something tells me, and I've been saying this over the past kind of few weeks, the lack of experience in that French squad. There's no Didier Deschamps, there's no Marcel Desailly, Laurent Blanc, Zinedine Zidane. That worries me a little, this French side, and I just wonder whether they could have a bit of a kind of an upset in there. Argentina as well, Lionel Messi aside, they are a side that has been struggling for form. So France and Argentina, look out for them perhaps not to make it as far as some of the pundits would have you believe. They would be the two nations that, yeah, just might flatter to deceive.
Who's going to win it?
Oh, I think I've said it. I said it at the top. I think Brazil, five-time winners of the World Cup. They come alive at a World Cup. They've got to exercise the ghosts of 4 years ago. The most extraordinary football result of my lifetime, if not ever. Germany 7, Brazil 1 in that semi-final. They've got Neymar. They've got a man well known to people in this world in the form of Tite, the coach, former Alain boss. He had a brief spell here. He is an astute tactician. He has got Brazil united. And in Neymar, I'll go back to it, they've got an absolute superstar who is refreshed and ready to anoint himself as one of the world's best. So if you're asking me for a prediction, Brazil-Spain final, and it will be Brazil to take the title.
Chris McCarty there, co-host of Sports Tonight.
That's it for the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Have a fantastic Eid. We'll be back with you, rested, rejuvenated, and ready to go sooner than you know it.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.